You have cats, and your cats are going to wreck your setup.
So that's the reason why we're getting a board gaming table to cover it up and to keep it safe from cats so that we can revisit. Like, that's going to be our first investment after our kids / after having a permanent home, wherever that may be.
Yeah.
Yeah. First investment.
You don't want your cats booping your setup. Yeah. All right, welcome back, everybody, to Asians One Board.
Hello, hello.
I'm Darren. I'm one of your hosts.
Yeah, this is Rio.
And we are here with our next episode, and it is the 10th episode.
This is the 10th one.
10th episode. Did you think we were going to do 10 episodes, or do you think we were going to flame out?
I think we asked the same thing at like 5 or 6 or 7. And 10 is definitely a milestone. It's double digits now.
Yeah, so, it's double digits.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I think I never thought this. I was taking it 1 week at a time, one episode at a time. So. Yeah.
And this is when I have this annoying thing online or on our files where I have to go back to 1 to 9 and change them all to 01, 02, 03.
Oh.
Because now episode 10 comes before episode 1.
Make sure that the order just automatically turns into that.
Yeah. If I'd been more confident, I would have started off at 01, 02, or maybe 001.
Great confidence, like really big.
Maybe I should just change it now, because if we do get to 100, it's going to be a real pain to go back
to go
and change all of those.
Yeah, do all 99 of them.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Yes.
And as usual, thank you for following and listening.
Yes.
With that in mind, we have hit 551 followers on Instagram.
551.
Which is hard to believe.
Because we were at like 200 yesterday, or like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. It's taken off. A lot of that is due to your efforts, engaging the community, and the community seems very nicely engaged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of Canadian and North American and also European like board game enthusiasts all across the globe. So that's very exciting to see. Yeah, see that engagement and speaking with people.
Yeah, it's really it's quite like exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And so tonight's episode, we're going to talk about kids and board gaming. And so we actually had a lot of people commenting on our posts looking for what people have been doing with their kids. And so we will be talking about that later.
Yeah.
So that was pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be giving some shout outs and giving some examples of what other people have gone through with their kids and what kind of board games they've played or what they are playing right now, I guess.
Yeah. So speaking of geographic boundaries,
yeah,
you know, most of our listeners are Canadian. According to our statistics, 62/3, basically 66%. A quarter of listeners are from the United States.
Mm.
We have our Singaporean listeners, which now numbers 5.
Oh my goodness. Who they are, I still don't know.
We have 3 listeners from Finland.
Finland.
Hello. 3 Japanese listeners.
Yes.
Some English listeners. Mm. Indonesian listeners. Indonesian. Icelandic listeners. German, French, Mexican, Dutch, New Zealand, Russian, and Taiwanese listeners.
Incredible.
That is really cool.
That's really cool, yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Global podcast is what we can say now, I guess, to some extent.
Now, somebody did give us a 1 out of 5 rating on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, no!
Which is disappointing.
It happened.
So, hopefully, if that person's still listening, we can try and make it up to them. They didn't put anything else. They just put 1 out of 5.
Okay.
But, you know, you're always going to hit and miss sometimes.
We'll do better. We'll do better.
So, have you had a baby yet?
Not yet, no. There was a bit of a scare last week. We thought that baby was coming, and I cleared all my schedules, and like we went into the hospital like at 2 a.m. and like got everything checked out. Apparently, the water didn't break.
We False just alarm.
Thought that the water had broken.
Okay.
Yeah, so all good. Baby's still in the tummy. Due date is in 3 days.
Oh, geez.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday. 4 days. The 14th is.
So if you hear an alarm going off in the background, it's that. And
it is that.
Don't worry, I'll carry on the board, the podcast.
Yeah, you gotta make
if
sure.
If Rio has to bail. All right, let's go to our first segment, which is, of course, Backed, Bought, and Sold.
Backed, Bought, and Sold.
Yes. Okay, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I could go first. Yeah, I have a... I tend to have a shorter list than you do. Okay. So I can go.
All right, you go first.
Slightly quicker. Rio's games sold. I did not sell any games this time around.
Okay.
I thought about selling Amalfi. But I have for now decided to keep it.
Okay.
To do some some of those the alternative starting deck situation.
Okay.
To be able to have I want to make sure that I really extend all try all the avenues before getting to the point where I sell it. So
no quick judgments.
No quick judgments.
Okay.
Yeah, give it another try. I was considering backing these games or a group of these games called Bebop, Shuffle and Swing, and Cat Blues.
That's right.
Yeah, so those are all games that are some Euro-y games as well as some the lighter card games. They are all very much jazz and music themed, and I'm very much a jazz loving and music loving person. So
I think the designer is on the on Vital's Discord,
yeah,
right?
He is. Yeah,
yeah, they're talking about it.
Yeah, and Vital basically is one of the backers of pretty much all the Bebop, Shuffle, and Swing, as well as the Cat Blues.
Yeah.
Cat Blues is going to be a game designed by someone else, but revamped and made more modern, like a modern print of the old game of Cat Blues. And it's a bit more of a... It's a really light game where you collect certain numbers and whatnot. But I brought it up with the wife, and she said not until later. So no backing of games at the moment until a little bit later. So games that I have bought.
We did that one.
Yeah, we did that one. I bought two little games, Wormspan, I guess, was already on the list for a long time.
You've received it.
But
now.
I've received it. I went and picked it up. So that is here now. We got to play it. We'll talk about it a little bit later. I bought another game called Sail. That's a tiny game. It's like iPhone-sized box.
iPhone-sized box. Okay.
Yeah. So it's basically a co-op two-player game where you are sailing through the sea. So you're, it's a trick-taking game.
Oh, okay.
So you're each taking tricks, and basically depending on what different symbols on those tricks are, you end up either moving forward or moving sideways, or you end up taking a damage, and the Kraken essentially is the one that will do the damage to the ship and try to take you down. So you're essentially getting... trying to get to a certain destination by certain numbers of tricks taken.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's a really hard game.
It's hard.
Yeah, we were able to finish level one, and we tried level two and failed.
How many levels are there?
There are six levels.
Okay.
Yeah, so I only...
Oh, you got 1/6 of the way.
1/6 of the way, yeah, so we're making our way there. Sail is a really fun game. I would say it's a lot. It reminds me of, it's a trick taking game, so it's like Cat in the Box.
Yeah.
But it's basically a co-op version of Cat in the Box. Hmm. Whereas Cat in the Box, you're kind of competing against each other and trying to be the best player.
Okay.
So final game. Final thing. This is a interesting one. Rio's Games 1. So I sometimes, every so often, enter into giveaways just to put in my name without any hope that it will actually go anywhere.
Yeah, especially Instagram ones are pretty easy. Just follow and
just follow,
tag
like
a couple random
share.
People.
Yeah, exactly. But this time around, it was a Eagle Griffin Discord one where it's even easier. You literally click a festive button, and that's you enter into the giveaway. And I was able to win Mercado de Lisboa. You already have this.
I have it, but I had to buy it. So I guess so. They're about to launch the Kickstarter for Vital's new game, House of Fado.
House of Fado, yeah.
And so to hype it up, they're giving away his other smaller games.
Exactly.
Of which Mercado de Lisboa is one.
Yeah, exactly. And they're also doing another giveaway of the Bot Factory.
Bot Factory, yeah. So I've entered both those giveaways. Ways now,
yes,
because I've been looking. I've just wanted to get Bot Factory, but I haven't got around to it, but now I'm gonna wait because I might win it.
Now we have two votes in, so like if either one of us win, we'll have the copy, so that'll be good too.
Do you know how many people entered?
I think about like 50.
Okay,
it's a really decent chance, like one in five or so.
Okay,
so we'll see what happens, eh?
That's pretty good,
yeah. So that's gonna come next week,
all right, awesome.
Excited about that. So your long list.
Here's your long list. Not even that long. It's not that long.
I guess it's been longer before.
So it's been really long. So I haven't backed anything, but House of Fado comes on like next week, I think. Yeah. So I will be backing House of Fado because I like Vital's games. I like the music theme, and I'm going to Portugal this summer.
Yes.
So it's going to prepare me for House of Fado, for Fado music.
Fado music, the Fado experience. You will already have that. In a board game format.
That's right. And I don't think it's going to be too expensive because it's not a big game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's probably be worth backing.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. Games bought. So backed, bought, or received. So I picked up an old copy of Netrunner. So Android Netrunner is a card game that was back in 2012. This is before I had kids. Mm-hmm. And it's what made by Fantasy Flight Games, and what they called it was a living card game. So it's not like Magic, which is a collectible card game where you kind of pay to win because some cards are rare and they're powerful. And so if you have the money or you can find them or you're lucky, you have those. This, everybody has access to the same cards and they just release, they call them cycles of cards.
Oh.
And so everybody has access to the same cards.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty into it at the time, but there wasn't a large community. And I started getting that Magic the Gathering, trying to catch up, you know. Gotta even though there was no like unavailable rare cards, the cycles came out so frequently. I was like, oh, this is becoming that kind of game again. So I stopped.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
But it was a really good game. Mm-hmm. And so for some reason recently, I felt like I wanted to... pick it up again.
Slight nostalgia about it.
Yeah, because they stopped producing it in 2017, and so now the card cycle is set.
It's finished. Yeah.
Yeah. This would be a good two-player thing I can play with Charlotte.
Yeah. Nice.
Because it's a really good card game. It's an asymmetrical game where it's like cyberpunk setting. One person is like a hacker, the other person is an evil corporation, and the hacker is trying to steal things from the corporation by hacking in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's completely asymmetric.
Yeah.
The two sides play completely differently, and yet they're both competing for the same objective. So it's really good.
That's really cool.
And then there's deck building, obviously.
Yeah.
And but then I found out it's hard to get because obviously it's out of print.
Yeah.
By like 7 or 8 years. So I managed to get off eBay a copy of the original core set for not too much.
Yeah.
And then I found out this company in Alberta, Null Signal Games, has kept Netrunner going by making their own set.
Oh, really?
But because they don't use... It looks almost the same, but it's not using Fantasy Flight IP.
Yeah.
I guess that's why they're not to do it.
Yeah.
And so they have actually started releasing all their own stuff. Now, I don't want to get into that same cycle again.
Yeah.
But what I've done is I picked up their core set. I'm going to combine it with my Netrunner core set because it's completely back compatible.
Right.
And then I think I'm going to stop at that.
Okay. Just keeping it at the core set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Really, I haven't looked at those cards. I only got them like a day, like a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
But I love Netrunner. Me and my daughter have already played it, you know, 4, 5, 6 times, and she really likes it.
Okay.
So that's one thing I got.
Yeah.
Then I picked up a bunch of games just off spur of the moment, mostly to get free shipping.
Yeah.
I wanted to get Hegemony, the Crisis and Control expansion, which I've been talking about for a while, because it gives you the automa bots.
Yeah.
So you can play with two player or three player and not have just an empty seat. You have like some interaction with the unplayed seats. So that's cool because sometimes, you know, it's hard to get four people to play that game.
It's a heavy game too.
And so because it's a small box, I wanted to get free shipping. So then I ended up adding onto that Salton Sea, which is this small De Vere box game, again, with big, heavy gameplay, kind of like White Castle. So I'm pretty excited about that. Also has an interesting theme about this desiccated lake in Arizona or California that they basically... have messed up ecologically, and now they're just drilling for brine, which they use to make lithium. So so that's an interesting theme. And then I also put on there a game that I've been wanting to get for a long time, and that's Zhangguo First Empire, or Zhangguo, I guess, if you can speak Mandarin, and which is basically a game themed around the unification of the kind of warring states of China by the first emperor. And so that's very cool theme. The game looks great. We've got it set up on our table right now.
It looks beautiful.
And actually, it's when going through it, like the gameplay is very thematic. You're just trying to do all the things that the first emperor was trying to do one of his like deputies. So it's actually looking forward to that.
Nice.
You know, as a Chinese person,
gotta
get that game.
Jungle.
And I got for my birthday the deluxe copy of Rococo.
From
Eagle Griffin. Adds to my Ian O'Toole collection. I've been spying on that game for a long time, and my daughter knew about it, and so she told my wife to get it for me for my birthday, and they did. So
That's fantastic. And we got to play it recently as well. That was so much fun. Such a good game.
So to make space for all these things, I have sold Revive. And I sold it because it was just kind of generic, wasn't getting played, so out the door. I sold Tapestry. I actually really like Tapestry, but the people I play with don't really like Tapestry as much. And it also wasn't getting played, so I sold Tapestry. I'm trying to sell Septima. I think Septima would sell very easily, but I have the deluxe edition, and so I'm not gonna, I'm trying to get something worth for it, but I can see why people wouldn't want to pay for the deluxe. But I think we already talked about why I'm trying to sell it, the reasons why. Great Western Trail.
I was surprised to see that, actually. What happened?
And you know why?
Yeah.
Because I want to change to New Zealand.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I was looking at New Zealand, and there are people that say, like, the Great Western Trail, like, the second edition, at least, is, like, people have opinions, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Like some people.
This is one of the great arguments, right? Which Great Western Trail is the best. So I'm going to try it, and I need the space. And actually, Great Western Trail wasn't getting played. So I'm going to sell it, and I'll probably pick up New Zealand.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to keep the Great Western Trail.
I think so.
Type. That game itself. Because it is a really good game overall.
And actually, I was thinking more about it, and I do like it more than Maracaibo, so Maracaibo is on the chopping block too. And I've sold Castles of Mad King Ludwig, which is this interesting game where you're trying to build a castle, which you're just placing rooms, like polyomino rooms. And that in itself is not particularly interesting. You have to hook up certain rooms to other rooms. But the interesting thing about it is this auction system where the first player each round can set which rooms cost how much money. So that's a little bit of a not quite hate drafting because it's an auction, but it's kind of that kind of sense to it. But just wasn't getting played and was taking up space. So out the door, Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Goodbye, Castles of Mad King. I just looked up the Castles of Mad King Ludwig II, and it is a real place and a real thing. So that's really interesting.
It's based on like one of the German castles.
Yeah.
Okay. Games played.
Games played, yeah.
Okay, so we're going back a couple of weeks now, I guess.
Yeah, we are, yeah.
And okay, so what did we play together? So most recently we played Rococo.
Yeah, we did.
And that was fun. We played four player.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be faster.
Yeah, it took a little... I mean, the actions itself were pretty quick, but I think similar, a little similar to Amalfi Renaissance. Like you were, you had the ability to kind of add actions. Make it longer. So I think that ended up happening quite a bit.
And you know what? Like it was super easy to play. Actually, surprisingly crunchy decisions. Yeah,
it was a very like brain burning decision that you needed to kind of think a little bit ahead.
And you know, during the game, so this is a game where you're like a tailoring house in the time of Louis XV in kind of France, and this is during the Rococo period of style. And basically, you have to tailor garments to for people to rent to be in the balls, the ballrooms, and then so what you're trying to do is put balls in different halls. There's five different halls, and you want to try and basically it's area control. You put the most gowns into the halls, and then there's various ways of scoring end game points. And I felt like I ended up in this kind of trap just because of turn order, and I was fair, and then somehow managed to pull out a very narrow victory in the end. But it ended up being a pretty tight game.
It was a very it was very like quite close between all the top like three were like only like 2-3 points, 4 points, like under 5 points away from each other.
Yeah, it was very tight. Actually, we weren't sure who was going to win in the end until we counted it up. And another beautiful production from Eagle Griffin Games. Ian O'Toole's artwork is amazing, it's as always.
Breathtaking.
Yeah, it's just like a really cool game. And there's expansions that came in it because of the deluxe.
Yeah, something that my wife and I were talking about like on the way back from that game was like, although it's trying to be a deck building-y game,
it's not really.
It's really not really, because you get to pick your cards from your deck as you. So like there was like what we realized was like I was very focused on like I kind of played it like a deck building game where I was eliminating cards to like really make my deck like slimmer and more like. Only good cards were left, essentially. Whereas, like, I think in this particular game, like, just taking a lot of cards doesn't hurt you as much as I thought it would, actually.
Yeah, I think you have to realize that it's not like typical deck builders. You're not trying to cycle the deck because you don't need to draw from the top. When you get the card, you get to play it right away, as opposed to most deck building, you have to put the card in the discard. And so you have to try and cycle to get to those new cards. But this one, you use it right away, and then you may not even get to play it again. It's very different in that way. There's no shuffling. It's not random at all. Which, again, takes away the need to pare your deck down and cycle it.
And you kind of know what kind of, and you once you have played it once or twice, you know exactly the kind of cards you will expect. That will come out.
So it has that kind of Agricola progression where there's level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of cards, and then so you and those are set, and there's only four per round, and so you know what's going to come out. And so you can prepare yourself for grabbing something. Now, we weren't at that level. First time, but that's how it works. So actually, the card is a mechanic, but it's not deck building.
And I think that's where my shortcoming, kind of my fall came, when I had approached it a little bit too much like a deck building game. And Camilla was talking about how like she had essentially been hyper focused on dressmaking only, and really forgetting about some of the other elements, which. Especially for endgame cards that she should have taken, that would have really boosted her points with the amount of dresses that she had available. She ended up not being able to pick up some of those cards.
Anyway, cool game. We definitely got to play it again.
Yeah, we'll play it again for sure.
So the other thing that we played, us two, was Escape Plan.
Escape Plan,
which is Vital Lacerda's most, shall we say... I'm not gonna say, I don't know if it's the least popular, but it's the one that's talked about the least, I would think.
Right, it's slightly divided, I guess, or like the those that swear by it will swear by it. Others that don't know about it don't really, or haven't played it.
I don't know. Like, it's just a little bit different from his other games. But I think it's pretty fun.
It's a fun game.
It's on the lighter side of his games.
Definitely.
And you could. You know, it only took us like hour and a half to play it.
Less than 2 hours.
And it's got this real interesting tension, which I understand that some people might not like. I actually didn't like it at first, and then I grew to like it, which is that you're a criminal. You've stashed money around the city. Yeah. You have to go to these various places to pick up your stash, and then on the third day, which is the third round, you got to get out of the city.
Yeah,
and in order to get out of the city, if you're the first person, it's free, but everybody after the first person then has to pay to get out. They have to bribe the police, basically.
Yeah.
And so there becomes this pressure and decision point where do you leave first or do you stay in and try and get more money? Because at the end of the game, the winner is the person who manages to A, actually leave, and then who out of the people who leave, who has the most money.
Yeah.
So if you don't have any money, there's no point leaving.
Yeah.
But then if you don't get out, it doesn't matter how much money you have.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting kind of
strong tension at the end.
Yeah.
I think during our play, I had a few movements that were not done in the right order, resulting in me being stuck essentially and getting caught by the police.
Because I got the opportunity as first player in the last round to place the exit, basically.
Yeah.
And as far from you as possible.
So far away from me. Yeah.
And then, but you had like a bunch of helicopters.
Yeah, I did.
And
you
had way more money than me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just stacked with money, but also didn't have cash on
hand. You didn't have cash on hand to bribe your way out.
Not at all.
So you didn't make it out.
Nope. But it was like, I'm a big fan of Money Heist, the Spanish like money heisty show. It felt like I was truly in that TV show, but on a board game setting. So because you get so many different like ways of communication or goods for you to basically build your case to escaping, as well as character cards, and you kind of bring a team together to some extent.
Yeah.
So it's such a fun game. I very much enjoy it. I think it's like Vital Lacerda's games tend to be like really brain heavy, like very heavy on a usual, like if it's a usual Vital game. But Escape Plan, I think after playing it, I felt ready to play another game.
Yeah.
Which is usually not the case when I play a Lacerda game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of long Lacerda games, I think you and your wife ended up playing Weather Machine for four hours.
Did. Oh my goodness.
Two players.
It's a two-player game. Well, I mean, out of the 4 hours, about like 45 minutes was just figuring out, remembering how to play the game. But it was, oh my goodness, it was a tough game. Well, I mean, for those that don't know Weather Machine, it's essentially another, like one of the latest-ish Vital Lacerda game.
This is most recent.
Most recent published one, I guess. Yeah. Before the Kickstarters or anything that's now like readily available. It's the most recent game by Vital Lacerda.
I would say it's probably one of his heaviest. That and On Mars are the two heaviest games that he has.
Yeah. So essentially it's you are each playing assistants to a crazy scientist called Latif,
which is Vital spelled backwards.
Yeah, I was trying to spell Vital backwards and I was failing. Latif, Professor Latif, is the one that is the scientist that is building a weather machine to fix the climate change and the entire weather phenomenon. While the government is trying to do the same thing, you are assistants to Latif, trying to get influence on the government side, as well as also helping Latif build that machine. And whoever basically gets to, support that cause the most in the most effective manner becomes the winner. There's also a Nobel Prize that you can win and whatnot. It's very involved.
It's definitely heavy. Heavy, and because the theme itself is kind of made up, sometimes a little bit abstract.
It's hard to wrap your head around sometimes
what the mechanics are doing
and
why you need certain things to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something that you want to have a clear head going into.
Yeah, and I think I had started with a clear head, but then I made one wrong move, and then I was not able to do it felt like I was not able to do anything. I was just like, it was a roller coaster of just not being able to do anything.
And your wife probably just kept going.
Yeah, and my wife just kept going. She knew exactly what she wanted to do and how to do them. She achieved all her like end game objectives while I achieved one of the multitude of the ones that I had.
Yeah.
So it was a frustrating game for me. Fantastic time for my wife. So that's really what matters.
Well, let's talk about two more games.
Yeah,
sure. One, of course, is Wormspan.
Wormspan, yeah.
So we played a big five-player game, yes. Which maybe we shouldn't have done five-player. We were trying to get one of our other friends into board gaming, and since we assumed that it was very similar to Wingspan which is a great intro game, which I think it was.
Yeah.
So Wormspan, if you don't know, is the sequel to Wingspan, which is probably the most popular board game, like, of all time. Yeah. I actually don't know what its numbers are compared to Catan, but Catan has been around for
so many more years.
Mm-hmm. In the same number of years, probably Wingspan will be the same. But and so it's basically Wingspan with dragons with a few differences in terms of mechanics.
Yeah.
But pretty similar engine building kind of game. So who won that? I can't remember.
Who did win that?
I'd have to look up. I think it might have been me.
I think it was you.
I've been on a bit of a win streak recently.
It was you because you had you had figured out an engine early on and you just kept on repeating the one thing.
It might have been me. I've been on a bit of a win streak recently.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was you. Yeah.
But so that was an interesting game. Mm-hmm. Did you like it better or worse than Wingspan?
Did I like it better or worse than Wingspan?
If you had to sell one, which one would you sell?
Oh, that's a hard one. I think.
Or do you think you can keep both?
So our plan is currently to keep both at the moment. Because, well, like our reasoning behind it is because as a base game, I think as a game, Wormspan is the better game compared to Wingspan. But if you add some expansions, such as like the European Oceania expansion, Wingspan becomes like just as good as a game as Wormspan.
Like base game to base game.
Yeah, the base game.
Wormspan does fix some of the issues that Wingspan had.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So like basically Wingspan had a few overpowered cards, a few ways of going about things with like cards that just worked way better than any other ones, and you like from the very get-go you would be able to kind of know which direction the game was going. Whereas Wormspan, you really don't know truly who is actually winning until the very end of the game.
Like, without doing a review, I actually think I like Wormspan better, but I like the birds better.
I know. Yeah, that's the thing. So, like, so birds... Like
hard to reconcile.
The thing about playing birds is that you actually, after playing the bird game, and then you actually get to go outside and see the birds and sometimes recognize some of the birds that you've played. And the actual theme and the fact that the birds' abilities are directly correlated to the type of bird they are is like there's nothing like that.
Like one of the joys of playing Wingspan is you look at the bird card and you're like, oh, that's a cool bird. I think I've seen that in my backyard or
in
whatever.
In the real
right?
world, yeah.
Sometimes you even read the little scientific data or whatever. But when I was playing Wormspan, I don't remember looking at the drawings at all. Yeah. Right? It just didn't matter.
Yeah.
It didn't even matter what the name was. Mm-hmm. It's just, what is the ability?
Yeah. What's the ability? What do they do?
And so I think that's unfortunate. Because obviously a lot of time and effort was put into that art.
100%.
So I guess that's hard. I know I've kept both. I don't have Wormspan. I don't think I'm going to buy it because I have Wingspan.
Yeah.
Maybe I will. I don't know. Yeah. I'm decided. I have to play it more.
Yeah. We can play it more. But it's a fun game. Regardless.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, one other thing I want to talk about is I was on a Voidfall binge. Because it's a great game. We talked about it on the last episode. But I ended up trying to play it solo like 3 or 4 times. Setting it up and taking it down, which is, I would say, an hour and a half combined work just to set up and take down.
Yeah.
And actually never getting past the first cycle.
Oh, my goodness.
Because at the end of the day, I just don't like playing games by myself. And so I did that three or four times. My wife's like, why did you set this up again? And then like an hour later, I would have taken it down. And I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, solo gaming.
As much as I really wanted to play the game, and I still do.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it solo. I'm just not a solo gamer.
I think, yeah, solo gaming, I've only done it a couple. Like, I've played Lisboa solo before, as well as, like, Weather Machine. I failed at playing solo. I think Weather Machine and me just don't work together super well. Like, Lisboa is, like, although it's technically the same weight of a game, it's a simple game to me. Whereas Weather Machine, you just need to figure out multiple steps in, like, to do the thing that you need to do, whereas something like this ball, you just do the thing, pick a card and do those actions. So it's not as like future thinking. But yeah, I think some games are better solo than others, and I'm sure once you get over the hump, Voidfall could be a good solo game for you.
Yeah.
Maybe one day. Maybe the fourth time is going
to
be
when I find an extra hour to set it up. I even wrote a cheat sheet on a piece of paper,
how to
abbreviating the setup steps.
Yep.
And because I figured I knew how to do each step by then.
Yeah.
I just needed a reminder of the order.
Yeah.
And so I have that cheat sheet. And it was color coded for like co-op, solo, and competitive.
Yeah.
It was very complicated. But yeah. Okay.
So today's topic.
Today's topic is on board gaming with kids.
Children.
And we're going to talk all about gaming with your kids, pros and cons, how to do it, what to do it with, and you know, what age. Like, we're going to cover all that based on our experiences, or I guess my experiences.
Yeah, mostly your experience.
So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Board gaming with kids, right after the break.
Right after the break.
We are back.
We're back. Hello.
Okay. So tonight's episode is about board gaming with kids. Mm-hmm. Kids in general, maybe not your kids, but probably your kids, but other kids, I guess.
Yeah.
Your kids are the only kids you can control.
True.
I'm going to start with a disclaimer. First of all, I have one kid. She's now 9.
Yeah.
You've heard about her antics throughout the podcast. Rio has
no kids yet. I have a pregnant
wife. But will very soon have a kid.
Have a 0-year-old kid
very soon. And so this is of relevance to him coming up soon.
Yeah.
And this is based on my experiences of raising a board gaming kid. Mm-hmm. So your experiences with your kid, your mileage may vary.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And also, this is not parenting advice. Don't treat it as parenting advice.
Yep.
Don't blast me for giving bad parenting advice. All right, this is not about parenting. This is about board games.
Yeah, this is about board games and Darren's personal experience he's had with
Definitely don't tell my wife about parenting. Okay, so the first, I was trying to think about the best way to structure this. And we're going to end at the end when I asked my daughter some questions. So we'll end with that, but we're gonna start with why and one of the things I want to emphasize is that this is board gaming with your kids, not board gaming for kids. And I think there's a very subtle yet important distinction. We're not trying to find kiddie games, because I don't think, one of my things that we're going to talk about is I don't think you need kiddie games.
Yeah.
I think you need to play with your kids, and then you can get your kids onto the good games.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're going to talk about. So why? Why would you do it? Why? Like,
why
would you want to play adult board games with tiny people? Well, I mean, that's a good question. So just from my experience, some of the pros, and maybe some of these are actually reasons why we decided to do it, other than the fact that we were stuck at home in the pandemic with lockdown, which I will admit was a big reason why we all started to play a lot of games. It's a family activity.
Yeah.
That's not based on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
I guess some games use like iPads or whatever, but So that's already a big plus. Mm-hmm. To get your kids away from screens is so difficult. Mm-hmm. And my kid doesn't really even have screens. She's just sitting right there right now on a laptop, actually. Mm-hmm. But I think to have a quote-unquote wholesome family activity that doesn't involve screens or watching a movie or a video game, I think there's got to be a pro.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be a win.
Yeah. I think it can be extremely educational for everybody, not just your kids, for you too. I mean, the amount of things I've learned about a wide variety of topics from the themes of board games and reading that first, you know, intro page of the rule book or looking it up on Google afterwards, and the things we've taught my daughter, like, it's just, it's a lot. It's the stuff that she wouldn't normally learn at this age. Mm-hmm. So, like, my famous story is that she went to, whatever, grade 3, I think it was, and some topic came up where the teacher was talking about the logistics of the class, and then the teacher asked the students, you know, 8-9-year-olds, do you guys know what, like, logistics means? And she's like, I know what it means because you have to go to the logistics department in Kanban to get car parts. And so, like, when I was teaching her that game, I had to tell her what the word logistics means, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And actually what Kanban is and lean and this factory and, you know, teaching her hegemony, we had to look up what neo-capitalism is. And, you know, she has to understand what working class and middle classes and why these things exist. And so these things are things that she doesn't know right learning right now, but she knows because of board games.
These are things that high schoolers don't even sometimes know about.
You know, she understands the principles of supply and demand because of Kutno Hora, you know, and so I think you can't underestimate the educational value of something like board games and like history, and then education in terms of reading and math. So this is one of the big reasons I started her early to work on her reading, reading cards, reading rule books, you know, that was a big thing, and math, even if it's just simple adding up hit points or, you know, subtracting, multiplying. And then one of the big reasons I bought, and we played a lot of Quacks of Quedlinburg, which is a game where you're picking... it's a push your luck game where you're picking out of a bag.
Yeah.
And so if you know how many pieces you could bust with out of how many pieces left in your bag, you can calculate probability. And so that's how I taught her probability.
Probability, at the age of
six or seven before she learned it in school. So these are just examples of educational value of board games. The other important thing about it, a pro, is life skills. And, you know, there's lots of ways of acquiring life skills, and lots of hobbies will do that for you, but you can definitely get that from board gaming. You know, critical thinking, strategic thinking, planning skills, getting a longer attention span, like to actually just sit down and do something, organizing, time management. And one of the big things, learning how to be a good winner and learning how not to be a sore loser. And, you know, she will be the first to admit that she was a bit of a salty gamer and a sore loser when we first started. And now she is much better. And I think that's in large part due to, you know, winning some games and losing a lot of games.
And I could imagine that's sometimes where parents may give up on trying to teach a game to a kid when they become too sore of a loser, or like I've read some comments about some kids essentially giving up before even getting to the point where you know where the game is going. And I can see that being a really hard thing to it's not something you can teach easily to be like. What was your tactic on teaching how?
So I will say there were some times where I would get really upset with her because she was getting really salty, and that was ruining my own game experience. But then I try not to do that, because then that just escalates into stupidness. So just trying to keep them calm and giving them a few you know,
not just
tips about what they could do, you know, give them some help, right?
Yeah.
But in general, I would say that I never let my daughter win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even at the most complicated games. Mm-hmm. And she still beats me on those games. Okay. But and it's not because I'm letting her win. I may give her a little help here and there. But, and so it's, you know, it's her own accomplishment. And I think that's important. You can't, just like people don't say, don't talk to your kids like they're your pets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would not play games with your kids and let them win on purpose.
Yeah. Right? No. Yeah.
Because that's part of the value of the experience is mm-hmm. learning how to win, but also learning how to lose.
Mm-hmm.
The salty thing, I think you just have to try and keep them calm, keep yourself calm and talk them out of it, you know, and, teach them strategies that they could think about to get out of the situation.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually a good way for the adults to learn and grow as well when they're playing with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's definitely the thing that happened. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, why wouldn't you want to play games with your kids? Maybe this is something that would be relevant to you, but your kids are going to be too young still. But so it's going to eat into your own gaming time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't play this game you really want to play because your kid's hanging around and you feel like you need to play this game with them. So I guess the solution to that is make sure you just like to play the same games. But you know, if you're doing something else with them, it'll eat into your time regardless. So. Yeah. You might feel an obligation like you always have to play with your kid, or they always want to be involved. So then you feel like you can't exclude them.
Mm-hmm.
It takes extra time to play with your kids.
To teach,
you know, like especially you have to teach basic principles of things.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have that extra time and have the patience.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a little bit more careful in your game selection, not only in terms of difficulty level, but also in terms of theme.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't want to, offhand, I can't think of like a too adult theme, but you know, maybe you wouldn't want to do like a vampire horror game or something, mm-hmm. right? Like, or a crime game, you know,
Gory games essentially.
You just have to be a little bit careful with your game selection. And this is not really a con, maybe it is, you might create a monster. I create a board game monster. So my daughter, there's a gaming club at her school, which is grade 5 and up.
Yeah.
So she's going to grade 4, so she's not allowed to join.
Mm-hmm.
And they play some, you know, proper Euro-style board games. But, like, I don't think she wants to play with these kids because she feels like it would not be challenging.
Not an even playing field.
Better than them all at it. And she told me she wanted to bring like Kanban into the gaming club. Like, oh, we've created a monster.
A board gaming monster. A genius. Yeah. No, that's funny.
Okay. What age to start?
When to start?
I think you can start as soon as you want, but obviously your kid, like not baby, but you could start as early as like 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously at that age you might, before they can actually read and anything, you can, your game selection need to be very specific. But you know, as long as they can sit down and learn something, you can learn to play a game. I would say the earliest like big game that we played with my daughter was probably like 6, 6 or 7.
Was it Wingspan?
During pandemic, right? So which was 4 years ago now. So like, 5 or 6.
Yeah, 5 or 6.
We probably, So, you can start early.
Yeah.
You can certainly start teaching your kids math and reading skills before school does.
Because
they can learn it. They're smart. And they can be above the curve.
Yes.
So, and it's a good way of learning. Mm-hmm. And especially at a time when we had lockdown and virtual schools and stuff like that, like it was a real good way of getting in that supplemental learning that they weren't getting virtual school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So the next session is advice on how to game with your kids.
Yeah.
Okay, and remember, this is not parenting advice.
For kids.
Yes, not for kids, with kids. With kids. So, as I say, teach them proper games. Mm-hmm. You don't need kids' versions. Mm-hmm. If your kid is like 6, 7, whatever, for example, you could teach them how to play Scythe from Stonemaier Games. Not kid Scythe, straight to proper Scythe. Mm-hmm. And kids are smart. They can learn way more than you. Their brains have infinite learning capacity at this age, under 10. They can learn 5 languages if somebody actually taught them 5 languages. And they would pick it up like that and be really annoying because they pick up everything so fast. And I have to watch a YouTube video like 5 times just to learn a game. But they can learn anything if taught with patience and taught properly in an organized and clear fashion. So start with the proper games. I'm not saying you have to go straight to heavy games, but start with the proper games. You don't need kids' games. Mm-hmm. Pick games that appeal to your kid thematically or visually. Mm-hmm. So, Mike, we played Hegemony, which, you know, thematically not particularly appealing for kids. Yeah. But I think if you can generally pick games which they find interesting by the look of it, or with components that are really visually or tactile, that can be a big part of it.
Yeah.
I remember that when she was really young, like, you know, 4 or 5, when we started to play games, she would actually take the games out in her own free time and just play with the components. And I remember with Wingspan, she would put all the bird cards out on the table one by one and spread them all out and just look at all the birds. And she became really knowledgeable about birds and was identifying them at the zoo and in the park and stuff like this. She even tried to play like Ark Nova solo because she liked the animal cards. So, you know, that can be an immersive part of the hobby for them, is actually just messing around with the components, not even playing the game. So pick stuff that's appealing. Patience is probably an obvious tip. Like, if you're gonna play and teach your kids, you gotta be patient, because if you get impatient and frustrated, they're gonna get impatient and frustrated, and it's not gonna end well. So you gotta have some patience. And you know what, I'm not the most patient person in the world, especially with my daughter, but for some reason when we're playing games, you can be more patient. So teach them like an adult. Use the proper terms. If they don't know what the terms mean, teach them the terms. And play with them like an adult. Maybe you need to give them a few hints or pointers, or maybe a house rule or two, but don't try and play down to their level. They're smart. Like, my daughter beats me at heavy games. So they can do it. You just have to teach them like as if they were a grown up. And they will respond. Don't pander down to them. And to that point, don't let them win. Just to let them win. Losing is a part of life. Disappointment is a part of life. Nobody can win all the time. And so this is an early way of learning that. In a friendly environment.
It's a very controlled environment, and, you know, it's a safe environment to lose, I guess.
And I think when they do win, really celebrate it. But also, you know, make sure you point out the things they did well, even when they lose. Just like any other kind of feedback situation. But I think, you know, you got to win and lose in life to learn these lessons, and so don't just let them win. So when we started to play heavier games like Lacerda's and stuff like that, sometimes you don't have the time to play 3 or 4 hours, so split it up. It's okay. I mean, just split it up, find a natural place to stop, and then when you come back to it the next time, then just do a quick little reminder, recap. What my daughter used to do sometimes is write down on a little sticky note or whatever what her plan was. For the when we started the next session. Or she used to use some other components, like from an unused player or whatever, and like mark out the order of things that she wanted to do that round or the next round or the next day.
That's very smart.
As a way of keeping things organized and so she wouldn't forget. So these are kind of strategies that you can use if you need to split a session.
Yeah.
Unless you have cats and your cats are going to wreck your setup.
So that's the reason why we're getting a board gaming table to cover it up and to keep it safe from cats so that we can revisit. Like, that's going to be our first investment after our kids / after having a permanent home, wherever that may be.
Yeah.
Yeah. First investment.
You don't want your cats booping your setup.
Yeah. Which they will. They will. They already have many times. Yeah. So, yeah.
Make the game environment comfortable. Mm. Well lit, comfy place to sit.
Yeah.
And lots of snacks.
Lots of snacks.
Even a treat or two. You know, grab a bubble tea or whatever. Mm. Like, make it a fun experience. Not just the game, but also, you know, good snacks and stuff like that. My daughter is constantly snacking. Over the course of like a 2-hour game, she might have like 10 snacks. I don't know. And then on the side of the table is just a whole bunch of wrappers and stuff. But, you know, it keeps them going. And it's kind of, you know, it's part of the fun of it. So...
yeah, it's. I mean, it also takes so much, like, it takes brain power anyway, and snacks are very much...
yeah.
It'll be burnt during the time that the games are played, so I'm sure that's not a problem.
So me and my daughter went through this morning
some
of the games that we've played in her journey that stood out, and that's probably not all of them, but some of the earliest games we played was there's a game called Tokaido, which is a very simple game of a one-way journey from one place to the next, to Edo and from somewhere else. And then so the decision space is pretty limited. You just have to figure out how far you want to go, and you can never go backwards. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to collect sets of things.
Yeah.
And this was it's fairly simple. It's very easy. It's very nice and visual. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the earliest games that we would play. Mm-hmm. And another game, as I already mentioned, was Quacks of Quedlinburg, which is a bag building game where you're trying to make a potion without it exploding. Mm-hmm. And so there's basically just push your luck and probability.
Yeah.
And so that was what we used to teach her probability at a young age, and also kind of fun, not very serious. She's just as likely to win as anybody else, really, especially. And also, an interesting thing about it is teaching her what is her philosophy to risk. So I was like, okay, well, you have a 25% chance that you're going to bust.
Yeah.
Some people would go for it on 25%. Some people might not.
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong answer. Mm. You just have to figure out what feels right for you. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of figure out what's their risk
tolerance.
Tolerance at a young age, which I guess is a good lesson to learn.
That's a very good lesson to learn at a young age.
Because you would always say, well, should I go for it? Should I not? And I was like, well, I can't make that decision for you. You got to decide if you feel like it's worth it or not. And then one of the big things that we did as a family, so us three, for 3 months, which really consolidated the gaming, was we played Clank Legacy. And Clank is a great game where you are exploring this map, and there's some deck building to it. And there's a push your luck element, because you're trying to go into the dungeon, grab a relic, and get out before everybody dies or time runs out. And the legacy was really good because there was a lot of unknown exploration, putting stickers on the board, ripping things up. There was a really quite funny storyline with it. You had to make decisions which impacted what cards would go in and out. So it was one of the best legacy experiences I've had. And it was a perfect weight and pitch for her. And she even won a bunch of those games. And so that really consolidated the board gaming hobby for us. And it was during pandemic, and we had a lot of family time. So it was great. So if you want to play a really good game for kids that is actually great for adults too, and has that fun legacy component to it, I really highly recommend Clank Legacy. We're super looking forward to Clank Legacy 2, which is coming out. But like, I wonder if it's going to be as good without the lockdown and the pandemic and that kind of...
the context really
context?
Made it.
Yeah, that's my one concern. Is like, is it going to be as good, or are we going to be disappointed? But
is it the... Acquisitions
Incorporated. So it's themed. I think that's like a Penny Arcade IP, so it's themed around that, not like the OG Clank.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cartoony and it's really comical.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really, really well done.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to play that. That sounds like I will definitely go back to this list once my kid is.
Well, when your kid gets to that age, you can play it because it's not going to age.
Yeah. Right?
It's good at any time.
Yeah.
If you could get it, that is.
Yes.
So the one game we played a ton of is Ark Nova. Now you may think, why is your like 6-year-old playing Ark Nova? Because she loves the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not particularly fussed about being artwork or photography.
Mm-hmm.
But just the whole theme of building a zoo and getting all these animals in front was very kind of like the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a complicated game. But as she's gotten older, getting much better at it strategically, such that our hit win and loss rate is probably even.
Yeah.
And so it's just been a great game throughout her years of going from just appreciating animals and conservation and those kind of themes to now being a really good strategic game that we bust out quite regularly.
Yeah.
Wingspan was one of the big ones. I mean, it came out right during the pandemic and it was the big hit and everybody had Wingspan. And as I already mentioned, she loved the birds, got all the cards. I was looking at them constantly.
Yeah.
Bird feeder with the little dice through it. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. The interactiveness. Yeah.
Yeah. Terraforming Mars, we played a lot of. I don't know why she really liked Terraforming Mars a lot. I think she really liked at the end of the rounds, you would just get a whole bunch of resources, and that felt really good. And then we started getting into heavier games, like around 6 or 7, starting with Kanban EV by Vitalo Cerda.
Yeah.
And I don't know, she's just good at that game. Even when we play it now, we can play a game in like an hour and a bit, and there's a very good chance that she will win.
Mm-hmm.
One time she beat me by like 30, 40 points.
Mm.
And yeah, it's just like a matter of planning and logic and, you know, organization. And
it just lines up for her. Yeah. In her mind and head. Yeah,
yeah,
that's amazing. That's...
And you know what's funny is every time we play a new game, no matter how heavy it is, she always wins the first time. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because you're just doing what feels right and that ends up doing better than trying to overthink it when you don't really know the game. I don't know.
But
she always beats me on the first game. That's kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's the sponge brain of being able to just absorb everything and just execute
or
right away.
She sees patterns that I don't see. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to end here because I've just done a lot of talking.
Yeah.
So sorry about that, listeners. Yeah. You've just been hearing me talking the whole time. But we will do a follow-up episode with Rio in the future.
Yes.
Once his kid has had some gaming experience.
Yeah, definitely. I will be able to share my personal experiences with a lot of disclaimers that it's not necessarily parenting advice next time around. Yeah.
Okay. So, so when I talked to my daughter this morning, what do you like about board games? What do you not like about board games? Here's what she said. This is what she likes.
Yeah.
You can do things that you would not normally be able to do in real life, like managing an assembly line for EVs.
Yeah.
You can experience things you wouldn't normally experience. You can learn new things. You can exercise, and I'm complete like quoting here, you can exercise your mind in different ways than the usual and get smarter. It is fun to figure out a plan to tackle a puzzle and figure out the strategies.
Wow.
It feels really good when everything clicks. It feels good to win, especially beating adults. Pretty colors and components. It's like a different kind of toy. It's a visceral experience. She did use the word visceral because she heard me use the word visceral. There's a super wide variety of things to do in games and so many different games. You can help develop attention span, which I think I put that in one. Losing graciously and playing with family and other people and friends like you and Camille.
Yeah.
So this is what she said about why she likes playing board games. Why does she not, or what things does she not like about it? Mm-hmm. Don't like it that if you make a bad decision sometimes, you can't go back or make up for it and it feels bad. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you got to give your kids take backs.
Yeah.
Especially if it's not a big deal, mm-hmm. right? She doesn't feel like, she doesn't like when randomness sinks a strategy.
Oh.
That's one of the big reasons we're ditching Septima.
Yeah.
She doesn't like waiting for other people to take their turns.
Hence why she doesn't play with Camilla much anymore.
Doesn't like analysis paralysis. She doesn't like boring themes. She doesn't like the kind of stress that comes with trying to keep up. And there's so many games and there's not enough space to keep them all or time to play them all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a kid with other hobbies, like, it gets less time.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting one, it's not something that she can do with friends her age. Because they don't necessarily play games like this.
Yeah.
And she can't share her good experiences with them because they don't play. So that's a really insightful feedback, because she's playing games that kids would not normally play, mm-hmm. and so she doesn't feel like she can share her experiences with them. She can't play with them. I think she tried a few times when a friend has come over to play some of these games, but they're just like, what the hell is this? Right? Like, and then probably she's not actually, while she knows how to play the game, she didn't develop teaching skills yet.
I mean, I have a hard time teaching hard games myself, so I can't even imagine how much harder than me.
So maybe a way around that is actually to teach your kid and their friends at the same time, if the friends are interested. Sometimes they're not.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. So real.
Yeah.
I've done a bunch of talking.
You have.
Why don't we go through some of this? So we put out a post on Instagram earlier today, just asking our followers there, since we have like 500. What are some people's experiences with playing with their kids?
Yes, and absolutely.
So go ahead.
I can go through some of the comments here. The very first, at first, whenever this comment came, I was like, oh no, there's no one that will actually comment seriously, which is Tace Games said, my games are my kids. Which it's like, okay, a lot of kids on the shelf that we all have. Following that up, the name of Hiromigi BBS Fine Art said, cute yukata. We played Tsuro with kids a lot. Tsuro is one of those like super easy tile placement games where you kind of like the block kind of goes into a maze and you're kind of creating a maze, and you try not to get off of the board, which is like a straightforward game. And I can see that being, we Camilla and I owned that. We were thinking about selling it, but now we have decided to keep it because it sure is a relatively simple game to get a kid started with. Pix and Parrot said, that's adorable. Yes, I play board games like Risk when I was a kid with my siblings and for chores, and I play with my kids. They didn't actually say exactly what they play. I think I asked, but next, 60 Minute Gamers at most game in my collection. So just like you, Darren, basically playing all the games with their kids. Another user by Jury Rolling Solo said their daughter loves Shadows of the Forest. I've never heard of Shadows of the Forest. I will look it up.
Yeah, I haven't heard of a lot of these games, but there's so many games.
Yeah, Camel Up is something
Camel
that
Up,
came up quite a few times. People playing very classic, shorter games, less complex card games like Sushi Go, Blokas, and modified version of Splendor. Some people, like some people stick with the very classic, simple games like Catan, or Key to the Kingdom, Survive, Camel Up, again, to name a few. Another one that I saw in the story that I shared was actually Onitama, that one of the people play quite frequently with the kid. And I can see that being, like, essentially Onitama is a simplified chess and a little bit more interactive of a chess game. So I can see that being a little bit easier for a kid to grasp in the beginning, rather than playing a full, like, teaching a full game of chess. Or if you want your kid to get into chess in the future, Onitama definitely is a good alternative to start off with, to play, I can see, as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are the many comments that we have received from many people, mostly in North America, I believe, but some, I believe, are in Europe as well. So thank you so much for all your friendly comments and your insights on what kind of games you play
with your kids. I feel like we should put a post up before every cast with the episode of the night, and people can kind of feedback or Q&A or...
Yeah.
Now that we've hit a critical mass of people actually following us, so...
Yeah, we've tried this like in the first few episodes as well, and we got... I think the only comment that we got was from my wife at that point.
She felt sorry for us, so she put in an anonymous question. Yes.
So we've come some ways in the past 10 episodes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is our episode for tonight. Mm-hmm. We hope you enjoyed, and we wish everybody, if you're going to board game with your kids, to have fun and enjoy it. And you can follow us at on Instagram at @2Asians1Board and email us at 2Asians1Board@gmail.com. And thank you for listening and following and subscribing. And catch you next time.
Catch you in the next one.